I think people here oftentimes, you know, say, oh, does that mean I am God? You know, when we say Aham Brahmasmi, we have talked about that before, but I think we need to cover that again. See, when we think of God, when we use the word God, what do we think of? God who created the universe, who created, sustained, and then will destroy it. So the creator, sustainer, destroyer, the one who creates and supports and then destroys. So people who are created by everybody is created by God, and then we live in this world, he takes care of us, and then when it is time to go, he takes us away. So in our scriptures, that is called as Ishvara. That is called God the Ishvara. So I am not Ishvara. I am not the creator of this world. I did not create, I cannot even create a leaf. If somebody asks me, can you create a leaf? No, I can't. Forgetting about creating all these stars and planets. So I am not the creator or the sustainer or the destroyer of the universe. So I am not Ishvara. But then in the scriptures, they say, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. So when they talk about Brahman, they don't talk about Ishvara. Who is Ishvara? Ishvara is that total consciousness, Brahman. When it identifies with all the vasanas, becomes Ishvara, like the consciousness, the Atma, the Brahman, that is me. I have my individual vasanas, right? Each one of us has our individual desires. And identifying with that, I become this limited creature. I can call myself Anil or Arun or Ambika, whatever name I give myself. But I give myself a name, or my parents give this name, and I become this limited creature, whether I'm a housewife or a husband or a doctor or an engineer or a teacher. So identifying with my limited vasanas, I, the consciousness, become this limited individual, this particular creature who is functioning and walking and talking. I could even be a dog or a cat or a bird or a fish. So that consciousness identified in each and every one of us becomes the individuality. Now when that consciousness identifies with the total vastness, the total desires of all the humans, all the birds, all the plants, all the fish, that consciousness is called Ishvara, who creates this whole world. So I am not Ishvara. I am the limited being called Anil or Arun or whatever name I have, and that is who I am. But when I identify with the individual, then I am an individual being. But when I identify with the consciousness, when I say I am that consciousness, which in reality we all are that consciousness who is playing the role of this individual. So when I identify with that consciousness, then I say there is only one consciousness, and I am that, because I am not separate. In fact, I can never be separate from that consciousness. I can never be separate from, if I say I am separate, God is sitting somewhere there and I am here, that means God is not all pervading. If God is everywhere in everything, then I am not separate. So that understanding only comes when you wake up to that truth. So this statement, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, comes at the end of the spiritual pursuit. We start with that idea, I am Brahman. No, we are at this moment a limited being. But as you study, as you love God, as you know who he is, as you serve him, slowly your selfishness reduces, the vasanas reduce, and you realize that I am that consciousness, I am that Brahman. So it is much better to say I am that consciousness or I am that divinity, because we all are that consciousness, we all are the divinity. The moment you use the word I am God, then it looks like you're saying something heretical, because how can I be God? I am this ordinary, useless creature. So that is the essence of this verse that he says, I am the consciousness that is there in all beings. So all beings are nothing but me. Aham adi madhyam bhutanam anta evacha. I am the beginning of all beings, I am the middle, and I am the end. Just as the mud can say, you know, I am the beginning of all the parts, I am the middle of all the parts, and I am the end of all the parts. So all the parts were created from mud, and in the middle, the part is there, it appears separate. The mud is on the ground, but the part is up on the mantelpiece. But the mud says, I am still there. I am the beginning of the part. When the part was created from me, I am the middle when the part is in the mantle place. And then when the part breaks, it comes and merges with me. So the mud can say, I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all the parts. The ocean can say, I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all the waves. So God is saying that I am the beginning, I am the middle, and I am the end of all of you. Because all of you are created from me, Brahman, that one consciousness has created, and every one of us is actually an expression of that Brahman, of that consciousness. But in our foolishness, I think that I am separate from others. I am, you know, this, you know, person is belongs to my religion, this person belongs to my nationality, this person belongs to my color, my skin, my race. In India, we say, oh, this person belongs to my state, so he's my friend, and one who doesn't belong to my, you know, so we get so caught up in all these distinctions, but a wise person sees that. So that is the essence of this shloka, that God is there, everything, and we are nothing but that divinity who has taken this particular form, and always remember that. And once you, the more you remember, the more you identify with that consciousness. Yes. In Vedanta, when they talk about heart, they don't mean the pumping heart. See, if you talk about the pumping heart, then all heart surgeons should be realized because they have seen God. They say, I have seen God when I've opened the man's heart. So when they say heart, the word is hrit, which means the essential being where all the good qualities reside and from where the life principle which sustains all your physiological activities, your pranas, your breath, your heart, your digestive system, your nervous system. So the center, the core of our being from where, and it's not in a one particular place. It is the core, it is the essence from where this whole life starts. Because this consciousness, how does it function in our body? You know, people say, this consciousness, I don't see it, but then yet I am able to talk and walk. So the example they give, which I must have talked about before, is that the sunlight, there is a beam of sunlight coming and the room is completely dark. Now outside the window, there is a mirror and there is a piece of stone, a piece of rock. Now the sunlight falls on both, falls on the mirror and falls on the rock. The rock doesn't reflect it. The rock absorbs the sunlight and that's it. But the mirror reflects the sunlight, so the light comes in the room and illumines the room. So the sun comes in the mirror is reflected, and the room gets lit up. So similarly, this consciousness, my body is like the rock. It cannot reflect the sunlight. But the mind and intellect are the subtle equipment. They are called the subtle equipment. And the subtle equipment has the capability of reflecting consciousness. Just as that mirror has the capability of reflecting consciousness because it is a clean, polished. So my mind and intellect have the capability of reflecting consciousness. So even though the consciousness is everywhere, why doesn't a rock start moving and talking and walking? Because rock does not have a mind and intellect. But you and I, we do have a mind and intellect. Now, some of the plants, you know, why don't they walk and talk? Because their intellect is very limited. All it can tell them is to grow towards the light. So depending on the qualities of your mind and intellect, you can work. Like a dog or a cat has more abilities than a plant, but has less than a human. So that consciousness has the capability of reflecting in the mind and intellect. And when it is reflected in the mind and intellect, that person becomes alive and is able to move around. But when the consciousness is no longer identifying with the mind and intellect, why? Because that body becomes incapable of, you know, of functioning. Like the body has become old or has become sick or had a bad heart disease or a major accident occurs, and something happens and the mind, intellect, and the body are no longer capable of sustaining life, then at that moment the consciousness no longer reflects, and this person, we say, is dead. So the consciousness is there all the time, but when the mind and intellect are no longer capable of expressing that, reflecting that, then the person is considered as dead. And it could be even a young child, you know. So the time for death for everybody is different. But what is life? It is consciousness reflecting in the mind and intellect, making the body move. So when we say I am in the heart, it does not mean it is in the pumping heart. I am in the entire body as consciousness, as life. And I am the seat of all the good qualities. I am the seat of the energy from which. So that's basically when we say heart. Yeah, I think, yeah, because, see, you know, because like when you love somebody, you know, you embrace them or you say, oh, he's close to my heart. So it has become a figure of speech. Yeah, but also there is the Anahat Chakra, which is the seat of all the emotions. You know, we have the six, seven, and you know the seven chakras. So the Anahat Chakra is where a lot of the emotions and all reside. So yeah, so that's why opening the heart is fine, because, but heart is not the pumping heart. It is the my emotional seat, the seat of my emotions. It's actually the mind and the intellect. The mind is the seat of emotions. The intellect is the seat of judgment. But the mind and intellect are not only localized to the brain. It is actually subtler than the brain. So that is the idea. And that's why we have these seven chakras. You know, like the forehead chakra is to do with intelligence and memory and all. So that is the neck chakra. The throat has to do with speech. You know, so that is the idea, that there are seven energy centers and the consciousness functions through all of them.
Things are chosen. Are there like dibs on, say that?
Well, you know, yeah, they say everybody chooses their parents. The parents don't give us birth. We choose our parents. Now, we'll say, well, if everybody wanted to choose them, then everybody would be born in Rockefeller's house, you know, or Bill Gates' house. Why would I be born in a poor house in Africa, you know, to a mother who is suffering from AIDS and who is a father who is, you know, left and abusive and all that? So they say that whatever body we take and whatever womb we enter in, the individual is called the mind, intellect and vasanas. That is the jiva. That is the individual. Now, each one of us takes a particular human body and enters a particular mother's womb where we can express our vasanas. See, each one of us has certain desires. Like in this life, I really, really wanted to take drugs. I had a great temptation, but I couldn't. I wanted to, but I resisted. You know, I really thought it would be so much, so great if I could get a heroin high, but I was afraid of the law. And my whole life, you know, I couldn't do it. So if I have this very deep, overwhelming desire to do drugs, next life I will be born in a house where I will be given drugs. Or if I was very poor and had this desire to be rich, and I do anything and everything and all, you know, illegal and legal things, and I still don't get the amount of wealth I want, and I want more and more and more and more and more, then in the next life I will be born in a house, I will be born in a wealthy house. If my journey in this life is to realize the truth, I want to know who is God. That is my most, actually that is the only purpose of human birth, is to know who I am and know God. But if I have this great desire, like Arjuna asks Krishna in the sixth chapter, that I have this desire to know you, Krishna, but I die before I reach the highest truth, then will my life be wasted just as a cloud, you know, the cloud that comes in the sky and then does not give rain. Sometimes like this, last week it was supposed to rain and the clouds went away. and didn't give us any rain, and that was a wasted cloud because of the wind. So he says, that means if I don't realize the truth and I die, that my life is wasted like a cloud? Krishna says, no. He says, nobody's life is wasted. If you have this desire to know the truth and to know God, then in your next life, you will be put in the house of yogis. I'll make sure that you are born in the house of yogis and spiritual good people where you can continue your spiritual journey. So each one of us gets the body based on our vasanas and based on our karmas. Karmas also, because if I have been a horrible creature, say I am a child molester and I molested lots of children, you know, like we find here these stories. Now, of course, that child molester obviously will be put in jail, but say suppose nobody finds out and he dies, or while in jail, under trial, he dies or he commits suicide. You know, sometimes we find these people kill themselves because they don't want to spend 30 years in jail. So those karmas are not going to go unpunished. So that person will continue his or her journey and possibly be born in the house of a child molester where he or she will be molested. So whatever is good or bad is happening due to our karmas. But then we should not take it the other way, that if somebody is suffering, you say, he suffered, let him suffer, he's suffering because of his karmas. No. My job in this world, if I have the ability to wipe somebody's tears, to relieve somebody's suffering, I must do that because it is part of my spiritual journey. It is my duty. If I can help somebody and I do not help, that is also, you know, a failing. That's why these great saints spontaneously, you know, helped everybody. Look at Mother Teresa. She went into the slums and, you know, at her own risk of her life and health, she was working, you know. So the idea being that if I have the ability to help and I find somebody suffering, it is my duty to try and relieve their suffering. If I have extra, I should share with others. If I have extra money, if I have extra time, if I have extra intelligence and I can help to, you know, guide somebody, if I have extra money, I should, you know, share with others. If I have the ability to work and I find there is a project that needs to be done, I should go out and do it. So I have to do my duty, but at the same time, see that all the suffering is caused by their own actions. So when I take a birth, to come back to your question, it is based on my desires from the past life and based on my karmas. So I choose the body, but I choose the body based on my own actions. It's not him sitting there and saying, you know, I'm going to put this guy in Rockefeller's house, let him be happy. I'm going to put him in a hut in Africa, let him suffer. No, he doesn't do that. He doesn't do anything. He just gives us the results of our actions. So we choose our own life. Everybody is the architect of their own future. Well, then there are plenty of humans like that who are on drugs, and then plenty of good and bad and so much variety. And then also in that total accounting, it may happen that you may not get in this life. You may get it in the future life. You know, in this life, you have to fulfill your drug tendency. In the next life, your money tendency and all those. So, yeah, or in the same life itself. In the first half of the life, I'll be fine. And then I, you know, get into drugs, or other way around. I may be born on drugs, but then I reform my life and become a good individual. So it's very complex. But the main thing I get out of this is that whatever is happening to me is a result of my past karmas. So only thing in my hand is the present, is the now. So let me do good things now as much as possible so that my future may be good. And let me continue my spiritual journey. And that is the only thing you need to ask the Lord. Oh Lord, may I never forget you. May I never forget my goal, that I am on this spiritual goal. And that is the only thing, rather than worrying too much about what happened in the previous life or why does this happen. Yeah, it's good to know. You know, we want to know why do some people suffer and why do some other not. But in the end, I am here. Why? Because I am on this spiritual journey. That's why I'm reading the Bhagavad Gita. That's why I'm listening. So let me continue my spiritual journey, O Lord, and let me never forget you. And it, whatever situation you put me, I'll be fine. You made me a man or a woman, I'm fine with that. You made me rich or poor, you made me happy, unhappy, that's fine. That's all the result of my past karmas. My only goal is to reach you, and in subsequent lifetimes, may I not forget you. May I remember. That's the only thing you need to ask, and that's the only thing you need to worry about. Everything else is secondary. You know, my children, my house, my money, my car, my job. Yeah, those are all necessary. But that's not my ultimate goal. Prabodhji from San Jose, he has come here a few times. He gives a very beautiful example. He says, you are going from San Jose to San Diego, right? You have decided you are going from San Jose. Now you get in a car and you are driving. It's, 400 miles of driving. And so in the middle, you know, you need to stop at a rest area. You need to get gas for your car. You need to have something to eat. You need to go to the rest area. And then you stop again after a while. You like some fruits, so you buy some fruits. But you know that I have to reach San Diego by the evening. But now if somebody stops in the middle and, you know, stops in Fresno, for example, and says, I love Fresno. Forget about San Diego. I'm staying here. And then he keeps on staying for months, and somebody comes and tells him, you know, don't you remember you had to go to San Diego? He says, okay, I'll go to San Diego later. I like Fresno. So that is how we are. You know, our spiritual journey is to reach that truth, which is our goal. But in the middle, we have rest areas. We stop to take care of our family. We stop to take care of our job. We stop to take care of our business. And then we have some fun, and it's okay to have, you know, some things and all. But while I am doing all those things, in the back of my mind, I have to constantly remember that my goal is that, and never forget that goal. And all my actions, all my knowledge, everything should be geared towards reaching that. And along the journey, yes, I have to fulfill my duties, which I take care of my duties, but I don't forget that I am that spiritual essence. But majority of us get stuck. You know, I'm so caught up. I'm so busy. You know, why are you busy? My daughter has to get married. So what? For 2 years, I don't do anything. Why? Especially in India. You know, beti ki shadi means forget it. The guy is useless for next 2-3 years. I have my business is right now is so important. And once my business is successful, Swamiji, then I will come to your mission. Swamiji says, why don't you come and listen to the Bhagavad Gita? Swamiji, I definitely will come. But let me establish my business. Business karte karte karte. He's become 60 and his business is still growing and he's more and more caught up. Again, we're not saying that you shouldn't do your business, but you are so caught up in that 60, 70 years nikal gaya and then your life is over. And then you say, Swamiji, now I am ready. By then you can't even walk, you know, your back hurts and then it's too late. So they say, start your spiritual journey now. Remember that my goal is San Diego, and along the way I will make whatever stops, but I'll not get stuck in Fresno. So similarly, my journey is spirituality. I'll not get so stuck in my business or my family or yes, I have to take care of my family. I have to take care of that, but that should not become the main purpose. And I should remember. So worrying about other things is okay as an intellectual knowledge to know why the world was created. But ultimately, none of it matters. You should only ask, why am I here? And why am I doing what I'm doing? Not to be selfish, you know, not to be selfish, but what is the true purpose of my life? I think the only question one should ask. Because until you clear your doubts, your goal will not be clear to you. You will always be focusing on the doubts. So there is no such question that is a foolish question. The only thing foolish is a foolish answer. See, if you don't know how to answer the question. So all questions are good because we have to clear our doubts. And I do the same thing. When all these Swamijis come and Swami Ishwarananda or Prabhuji and all, I go for a walk with them in the morning. And I keep asking them questions, you know, so all these kind of questions, so that then it makes your understanding clear.
How do we explain the population growth? 7 million.
Well, because there are very few of us, you know. In one place Krishna says, out of thousands and thousands of people, one person chooses the spiritual path. And out of thousands and thousands that choose a spiritual path, only one reaches me. So the idea being that there are so many people, how many million people are living in Bakersfield? 500,000, right? How many of them are studying, you know, Bhagavad Gita, or really studying, you know, the Bible, or going into the essence? Not that many. So the fact that we are here and reading this book, we are already on the journey. That's what even Prabhuji says. He says, once you know your goal is San Diego, half the problem is solved, that you know where you have to go. And once I have heard that my goal is self-realization, at least in the back of the mind, now that becomes an understanding. Then how to implement it, then that is in the details. Like when I'm going from San Jose to San Diego, whether I go by car, whether I go by bus, whether I go by train, whether I hitchhike, whether I fly, those are all details. But my goal is San Diego. Once I know that, then whatever means I can take. If I don't have any money, I stand and hitchhike, you know, and wait for somebody or truck driver to take me. If I have a lot of money, I fly. If I'm even richer than that, I rent a private jet and charter, and then takes me from San Jose to, you know, San Diego in 1 hour, you know, where I don't have to stop anywhere. So similarly, when I am on this spiritual journey, then depending on my mental and physical capabilities, I will progress. So the ones who reach him are very few, but there are a lot more who are on the journey. And then there are majority of the people don't even care. They don't even want to know about what is Gita or what is Bible. They don't care. They may go to church for an hour, or may go to temple, matha teka, you know, put some flowers and put some prasad and come. That's it. My job is done, God. I'll see you next Sunday now. I'm done. You know, half an hour, 1 hour, fatafat, you do your aarti very quickly and put the prasad, put 10 rupees or dollars and came. My spiritual duty is over. So majority of the people live their life like that. So very few people realize. So that's why how many realized masters there are. But there are also others whom we don't know. You know, there are only one Buddha, one Jesus, one Swami Chinmayananda, but there may be so many other people who have realized, but who don't go out and speak, who don't go out and teach. So why is the population increasing? Because he is infinite. See, the Lord is infinite. He has infinite capabilities. And another reason some people say, well, there are certain number of jivas, right, in beings. Now, how many plants we are wiping out, how many animals we are killing, how many fish we are destroying. So all those creatures we are destroying are becoming humans. So that is another way of explaining it. But the idea is that he is limitless. You know, he is, and this is only one Earth. We don't know how many such planets and how many such stars. There may be billions of such worlds. And then these are only the worlds we know. Then there are the supernatural worlds, you know, the heavens. You know, the seven heavens above and then six hells below us. So there are 14 such worlds. We only know one world from here to the end of space, you know, say 3 trillion miles. And that's all I know about. But there are so many other worlds we don't know about. So it's limitless. Yes. Actually, there are a few. Actually, first of all, of course, the scriptures say that. So if you have faith, then you don't even need to ask. You say, okay, it's written in the Gita, I believe it. But you just say, I'm a scientist and I don't believe in all this. So there are many examples, like people who are, you know, child prodigies, like Mozart. By age 5, he was composing. He was composing huge, you know, sonatas, huge operas. By who taught him at age 5? His parents didn't. He took a piano and started composing. Now, how could he have done that? Bobby Fischer was a chess grandmaster at age 10. His parents gave him a chess board and he immediately knew how to play. And he was, by age 10, he was beating all the world's best chess players. Shankaracharya, by 8 or 9, he was a realized master. He was writing commentaries on scriptures and he was giving talks. You know, where could that have come from? Raman Maharishi, when he was like 7 or 8 years old, he used to go into deep samadhi and he could actually watch his body, you know, like, you know, separately. So how do these all these child prodigies come about? You know, then, so that is one reason to show that they must have done. Plus, if you look at two children born to the same house, to the same parents, you are given them the same food, mother has eaten the same food, she has given them the same nourishment, the same love, same milk, and still one is so good and one is so bad, you know, how does that happen? And then in India, I don't know about here, but periodically they have articles in the paper where certain individuals start talking and say, I used to live in this village. And they say, what do you mean? She says, no, there was in the article in the paper where the reporter went to this person and she said, I used to live in that village and my name was this and I was a man. They said, it's not true. So she said, no, I was a man and my brother was this and my father was this and my mother was this and these were my children and this is how I died. And so they actually took that lady to that village and she repeated exactly the facts that man who had died had gone through, complete in detail. Who was the mother, who was the father, who was the child. So there are stories where people for brief moments or for a few years do remember their past. In fact, it is good we don't remember, because if I have remembered all my past lives and say in my previous life you had to give me $10,000 and you didn't give it, then I'll come and file a lawsuit that in my past life she owed me money. So it's better we don't remember, because but there are many examples. But I think, again, when you see the world, all these people, some people are happy, some are unhappy, some are suffering, some are not, then either you have to say that God up there is a gambler. You know, he's very partial. He's flipping a coin. Okay, heads, okay, I'll make him happy. Tails, I'll make him unhappy. Heads, he'll be healthy. Tails, he'll be unhappy. He's not like that. He's all loving. He's all compassionate. He loves us all. He's not selectively going to bless a few and punish a few. If you believe in his nature as all loving, all compassionate, all kind, all beautiful, then the reason we are suffering is because of our past actions. That is the only scientific explanation of why there is so much sorrow. Other people say, why did God make such a sorrowful world? He didn't. He made the world beautiful and complete. The only mistake I've talked before, only mistake he made, it's not really a mistake, but what he did was he gave humans the ability to think and gave them the freedom to choose. A cat doesn't have freedom to choose. A dog doesn't have freedom. A lion doesn't have freedom. A plant doesn't have freedom, but human was given freedom to choose. But then he put the law of karma. Along with the freedom comes the responsibility. You know, like they say, now, when you're free to vote, then it is your responsibility to vote for the right person. So we got the freedom to choose, but then comes the consequences. Depending on your good and bad actions, you get good and bad consequences. And that is the law of karma. So all the problems in this world are caused by humans. They're not caused by him. Like cats don't have any problem. You know, lions don't have any problem. Plants don't have. It is we who destroy the environment, we who pollute, and we kill each other's children, and we kill each other's wives, and we take each other's land. And it is humans who create all the problems. Huh? Yeah, God giving intellect, but we misuse it. Absolutely. Right, right. No, actually, they say, why did he create? Because he had the ability to create. And so he created the world. And he created a beautiful world. That's why they say, now he created Garden of Eden. And then once he made the Garden of Eden, which was perfect, then he put Adam and Eve there. And that's when all the problems started. All the wars and the children started killing each other, Abel and Cain and all those. So, but he also gave us the ability to think, and he gave us the scriptures. That's why he says, that he came as Jesus, he came as Buddha, he came as Shankaracharya, he came as Swami Chinmayananda, he came as Guru Nanak. So he comes as different saints, as Mirabai and all of those, to guide us and enlighten us. So our problem is that we don't have time for, you know, not only we don't have time, but we persecute the saints and we destroy the books. You know, we say, or we have a book, we keep it in the cupboard and we pray to it. Oh, you know, that's what we do in India. We pray to our scriptures. I mean, that is good. You should pray and respect it. But that's all we say. Matha tek liya, you know, that's it. I'm done. No, the idea of the scriptures is not to be prayed. They should be opened. They should be studied. You should make lines and you should, you know, what you, questions you have, you can write down. So the scriptures are meant to be studied, not meant to be worshipped. Yeah, of course, they are meant to be worshipped in the sense they have. You have to respect your scriptures. But don't just keep them locked up in the cupboard. You know, take them out and study them. So even though he has created the world, but he has given us the scriptures and he has given us the saints and the prophets to guide us. So he, it's not that he left the world to suffer. He comes again and again. You know, in the 18th chapter, he says, that's the most famous shloka, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. So he says, whenever dharma is on the decline, and good people and the good ideas are suffering, are going down, I come. And so that is what we say. He comes as the various prophets. And so he is all compassionate, all kind, all loving. It's not that he's sitting there and having fun at our expense. No, I don't think so. I think of him as a, you know, as a close friend, as a, you know, as the closest thing you can be. And that's how we have to see God, as our beloved. As the closest thing to you, closer than anybody, closer than my child, closer than my husband, closer than my wife, closer than my money, my business, not closer than my money. That is very hard. Husband, wife, theek hai. But money, no. Yeah, so. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschit dukkhabhag bhavet. Om shanti shanti shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Harihi Om.